Yes, yes, this is DJ Ski, and this is the Sports Card Strategy Show. You already know, there is no off-season.
I'm Jeff Wilson, and I'm loving the content here on the Sports Card Strategy Show. There is no off-season.
All right, you ready to rock?
Ready to go.
What's up, everybody? I'm Paul Hickey with NoOffseason.com. This is the Sports Card Strategy Show, brought to you by Graybo's Sports Cards. Graybo's Sports Cards is a local card shop located in Richmond, Virginia, and is owned by Gray Burnett, Ryan Fitz, and Duke Dodson, who you know as Denny One Time. Graybo's sports the best selection of singles in the Mid-Atlantic and a wide variety of wax. Graybo's is happy to announce that they are now the only direct buyer of Topps Bowman in Central Virginia and are now breaking daily on Fanatics Live. They are moving to their new larger shop, which will be connected to the hottest sports bar in Richmond in the near future. Stay tuned for those details. Listeners of Sports Card Strategy Show can use the promo code GRAYBOWS20 to get $20 off their first purchase with Graybo's on Fanatics Live. Don't forget to get a free 30-day trial at nooffseason.com today to help you make money flipping sports cards, build your sports card investment portfolio, get unlimited advice from our experts, and take sports card school to navigate the hobby. That's nooffseason.com. Get your free 30-day trial today. All the data we use on the Sports Card Strategy Show is from MarketMoversApp.com. Use code NOOFFSEASON at MarketMoversApp.com to get 20% off for life after a free 14-day trial. All right, let's get to the Sports Card Strategy. Let's get to the Sports Card Strategy. I am your host, Paul Hickey of NoOffseason.com. Welcome, welcome, NoOffseason.com family. And those of you who are new to the Sports Card Strategy Show and possibly new to our wonderful sports card hobby, more and more people are coming into the hobby. And what I always tell people is, imagine if you could go play golf or go to a movie and pay your entry fee to the movie or your greens fee for the golf, and play the round or watch the movie, and then say 9 months later, somebody comes to you and they're like, "Hey, Paul, I want to pay you back your greens fee and maybe even a little bit more for that round of golf you played 9 months ago. Or remember that popcorn, Twizzlers, Captain Crunch?" It would actually be like a Nestle Crunch bar. I don't think they sell Captain Crunch at the movie theater, but you know what I mean. We want to pay you back and then some. For that movie you saw and those snacks that you bought, that icy, that Slurpee you bought at the movie theater, we want to pay you back for the movie that you already enjoyed and then some. When you shot your career low of 74 9 months ago at that golf course in Franklin, Tennessee, we want to pay you back and then some for that amazing round of golf that you shot. That is the sports card hobby, especially if you become part of the NoOffseason.com family and listen to the Sports Card Strategy Show, because we are here to help you make money flipping sports cards, which makes you enjoy our great hobby even that much more. So let's say hello to our live chat. We've got Del Berry in the house, says, "I'm a part of the family now." Del, great to have you, my man. Love new names in the live chat. David T and Sean Red 5 Cards, both premium members at nooffseason.com. Of course, you can get a free 30-day trial today at nooffseason.com. Gabe Davis, what is up? K Cards in the house. What's going on, K Cards? Appreciate you in the live chat. Joel Kaplan says, "Is that the guy they call Paul, the biggest brawny guy in the hobby?" Joel, I got an update for you on my brawny card. Stay tuned for that. And Joel says, "Sell Paul Skeens." Well, yeah, I mean, Paul Skeens is up. Paul Skeens is up, that's for sure. And K Cards was asking about, do I move my SGC 9.5 Skeens or hold? K Cards, I really encourage everyone to ask questions through nooffseason.com/ask, because it gives me the opportunity to do the research for you and give you a little bit more opportunity to give me details on the situation that you're in. So how much money did you put into the card? what exactly is the card? Like, there could be a million different SGC 9.5 Paul Skeens, for example. So that is just because I want to help you as much as possible. I would strongly prefer that everybody listening to the show go to nooffseason.com/ask. Ask me a question there. I'm going to answer it. And if you're not a premium member, you get a free 30-day trial. You hear my answer on the premium pod on Fridays, every Friday. Jaymont in the house. What's up, Jaymont? All right, we're going to get to our question of the day here because we got a big-time treat for you. We're going to count down my top five pickups from the Dallas Card Show. And we're going to do Will It Gem. And it's a special edition of Will It Gem with our guy, Mr. Minty. My new friend, Steve. You may know him as Mr. Minty. He helped me with something. So we're going to get into that later in the show. But before we count down my top five pickups from the Dallas Card Show, I sat down with my main man and your main man, Kendall the Lefty McKee, at the Dallas Card Show. And we put together a great piece of content for you here that we're going to share on the pod right now. But first, let's do question of the day. Question of the day, what's your biggest card show win? Drop it in a comment below at youtube.com/PaulHickey or answer on the pinned post on Instagram at Sports Card Strategy. I want to know, what is your biggest card show win? And a quick shout out before we get into the interview with Kendall the Lefty McKee and I from the Dallas Card Show. Back to Instagram for a second. Two people that are new friends that I want to give some love to. Rafael Mosley, Prism God. Great person. Just a great person. And I got some time to talk to him one-on-one at the Dallas Card Show. And I just love talking to him. He's just a good dude. And Mojo. Jay. So Mojo Sports. Mojo Sports LLC is Jay's Instagram handle. And Raphael's Instagram handle is Prism_God, which he spells G-A-W-D. They're both just great people. And I'm really, you know, that's the thing about going to card shows that is underrated. I think all the time we talk about, well, what did you pick up? I mean, the title of today's show is my top five pickups from the Dallas Card Show. It's not, I met some great friends at the Dallas Card Show, but it probably should be, because for as many great pickups as I had at the Dallas Card Show, I did meet some great friends, and I'm grateful for that. And that's what the hobby can do for you too. So if you're new to the hobby, you're new to the Sports Card Strategy Show, we're super happy to have you here. Get involved, answer our question of the day at youtube.com/PaulHickey or at Sports Card Strategy on Instagram. And we're going to get into my top five pickups from the Dallas Card Show. But first, we need to talk with Lefty McKee, and this is from the Dallas Card Show, before we get into my top five pickups, and it's all going to make sense. Let's get into it. Oh, what should we do?
Are we feeding the ducks?
Feeding the ducks. It's a simulcast, Lefty Cards and the Sports Card Strategy Show. From the Dallas Card Show, let's give credit where credit is due. The Roadshow Cards team deserve credit for having us here. Texas Roadshow Shop specifically. I'm Paul Hickey. I'm here with Lefty McKee. Shout out to Cody and Chase Krim. Lefty, how you doing today, man?
Man, I'm good. This is my first Dallas Card Show. I'm from here, so this is a good. This is a fun one for me, man. I think my dad's gonna come out later today. We're going to make a whole family ordeal about it. But we're at a card show, Paul. It doesn't get much better than chilling on the weekend with your boys at a card show.
It doesn't get any better than that. It really doesn't. And you and I, we've known each other since early 2021, maybe even late 2020. We met face-to-face for the first time in 2022, July 2022, at the National in Atlantic City. And I'll never forget it. I was like, this is my favorite thing in the world to do. Be at a card show with Kendall the Lefty McKee. Specifically with you. Specifically with you.
Appreciate that.
We had so much fun, and we continue to have fun.
So this is the first day, really, of the Dallas Card Show. We're here on Friday afternoon, just after lunch. But yesterday we were at the show for a little bit. We did some walking. We did some VIP access. And we were together maybe 5 minutes before we lost each other.
Yeah. Well, that's what I like about being at a card show with you is it's just a nice flow.
Yeah.
You know, we can be with each other. We can separate. We can come back, find each other. It's just good vibes. Yeah, we were with each other for maybe 5 or 10 minutes, and then we went and did our own thing, and then we met back up, and then we went and had barbecue.
Texas barbecue.
Texas pit barbecue.
You had your first experience of Texas.
A Yankee like me.
What do you think?
It's good, man. You know, it's not my thing. You know, my thing is like Thai food.
Oh, I love Thai food.
Do you? Okay.
Well, maybe we should do that.
Cleveland. Let's or tonight. Go. We got tonight.
Yeah.
You going to be around?
Yeah.
All right.
Bro, I'm here on business.
The lefty's with me, guys.
Come
so
on.
We'll do some Thai food tonight here in Dallas. That Dallas has good. Everything.
Yeah.
Technically, it's Allen, Texas.
Yeah. You know who's from Allen?
No.
I'll give you a couple of hints.
Multiple choice?
Yeah.
Okay.
No. I'll just give you enough hints. That I think you should get it.
Okay, sounds good.
He's a quarterback in the NFL. Okay. Starting.
Oh, okay. Not Kenny Pickett.
Nope.
Okay.
Starting quarterback in the NFL. Is not known for his arm strength.
Okay.
He won 4 straight Texas State high school champion or high school state titles. Played at a college in Texas, then transferred to a college outside of Texas.
Okay, those are great clues, by the way. Like, I should get this.
I have some other clues that I can give you, but I'll give you a second.
Yeah, give me a second. Let me go through the teams in my brain here. I'm typically pretty good at this, but if it gets too awkward, you're just going to have to keep giving me clues. So let me go. So you Dak Prescott?
Nope. That's a good guess.
Thanks.
I don't think he started in Texas school.
Okay. Yeah, he didn't play at a Texas college, did he?
No, he went to Mississippi State.
Yeah, I missed that. I thought maybe, yeah. Okay, starting NFL quarterback. Is he top tier starter NFL quarterback?
No.
Is he top 15?
Yeah.
Top 16? About top
there.
Half?
About there, I would say. Maybe top 20. Has been hurt as of late.
Okay.
Is not old.
Has been hurt as of late, not old.
You want me to give you some a lot easier hints
give
at this point?
Give me one more hint.
Was drafted in both sports, or in two sports.
Kyler Murray.
There it is. Ding, 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 ding.
Thank you. Thank you for the extra clue. Kyler Murray, outstanding athlete. What do you think? Okay.
Incredible Allen football player.
Is Kyler Murray someone that people can make money on?
Absolutely.
This
right
year,
now? Yes.
Right now. Okay.
Maybe not at this show because we're in Allen.
Yeah. But good point.
You know, definitely if you're at a show in, I don't know, Cincinnati or even a non-football town. Let's say Lexington. I'm from Lexington. There's no Cincinnati Bengals is the closest. You could probably find a good Kyler Murray deal there that you can flip in 3 months. I mean, he just had Marvin Harrison Jr. go to
his
team.
Yes. I think there's a lot of opportunity for people to make money on Kyler Murray. The only thing I'm going to say is there is some hype around him.
Yeah.
You got to be careful not to overpay.
And you got to be
because
careful
I
not
think,
to overhold.
Yes, that's true. And because I think with a guy like Kyler Murray, I think there's enough awareness of the fact that he's been injured, that he's been down, and now that he has an improved
people
weapon,
are going to create the narrative.
People are going to, and they're going to, I guess, bid him up either literally on eBay or just in person. They're going to build him up or bid him up to the point where they'll overpay on the premise that he's going to get to. And actually, this is a good topic I wanted to ask you about. I think in hindsight, you and I like to pick apart our mistakes.
Yeah.
We really enjoy picking apart our mistakes.
I mean, that's the only way you win.
Yeah. I agree. And we do it all the time. Whether I talk about it enough on the show is debatable, but I definitely do it all the time. And One of my biggest mistakes that still to this day is kind of a hard one to avoid is like just that narrative in your head of like, this guy's underpriced.
Yeah.
I think because his card sold for XYZ at this point last year when he was healthy, it's going to do it again. And what I've learned is that that's definitely not always the case.
No.
So I think that's really the only thing that I want to let people know. If you're out there buying Kyler Murray, it's not a bad idea. You just got to really, really be careful on the pricing, because don't assume that just because you can get it for under comps or that you can get it for less than what it sold for in the past, that it's going to go back up to where it was. Because, you know, for a lot of reasons, like there's a million different cards you can buy. There's a million different things that can happen in the NFL. You mentioned overholding.
Yeah.
But I think you're right. I mean, I think generally speaking, people can make money on Kyler Murray right now. When would you sell Kyler Murray? Because you mentioned not overholding. So when would you sell him?
I would sell in the preseason speculation. Like, and we talk about this a lot. We've talked about this a lot over the past, you know, 3-4 years. But I think this is becoming more of a... We talked about this a lot early in this year because of when I was selling most of my baseball prospects. Like, I sold Jackson Holliday in March before he had the opportunity to ball in spring training. So, yeah, I maybe have cut off 10% of my earnings, but I got 90% of what the card was worth at its peak. And I was able to safely and securely move that money into, like, my famous move this offseason was I moved a raw non-gem auto of Jackson Holliday with an Xavier Isaac base auto for a refractor PSA 10 James Wood auto. And the value was about the same at the time. Now the value is not even close because of Holliday's value dropping. Now that James Wood card is going to sell in a month and a half, and I'm going to make more money on that card than I would on the other two had I held for the extra 10% of Jackson Holliday. Of course, Xavier Isaac is not close yet, so I have time to re-enter into that market if I want to. But the point is, I don't think you have to wait for the perfect time. Wait for the like, I put myself in the shoes of another smart buyer. You know, let's just say that somebody is like, okay, it's July or early August. There's a lot of fuel around Kyler Murray, the Arizona offense. Maybe they can make a run now because they have more weapons. There's a coaching change, all this stuff. The narrative starts to play. They haven't necessarily played a game yet, but the narrative is starting to look really good. I think I'm selling there because that's the time when people are looking to buy cards.
With meat on the bone still for them.
With meat on the bone. And I am willing to sell some meat on the bone if I walk away with more cash than I had previously.
Yes. That is 100% brilliant advice to everybody, because you and I remember as far back as a deep dive on the Sports Card Strategy Show, you said you were going to do that. You were like, look, I'm concerned with the market of Jackson Holliday being flooded around the call-up, so I'm going to look to sell my Jackson Holliday's earlier than that. And you were right.
Because I knew I had enough meat.
Yes.
You know, you didn't have to sell it at the
you
peak.
You were in at a price that you knew that you could win on at that time. And that's what I kind of want everybody to be doing more of, because you do not know what's going to happen in the market. And so I think the minute that you're up on a card,
yeah,
to the point where after fees, you're going to profit 20%, that's a huge win.
That's a huge win.
Yeah, because, and I don't think enough people do that. Probably because I haven't talked about it enough, but it's something that I want to keep talking about, because even at like a card show like this, if I'm up 20% on a card,
you have to move.
I'm moving it. Even like I talked to you earlier, like my Arch Manning Prism Throwback PSA 10 out of 49. That's like something that I could hold, and maybe it'll go up to $1,000. I'm like $250 into it. I've got an offer for $320, and I'm thinking, huh, it's $320 cash. Should I make that move? I think I'm making the move. I'm making similar moves on Kyler Murray that you're talking about. I've got one Kyler Murray card. It's a Kaboom PSA 9 rookie. and I'm a little under on it right now. But I think that during August, I'm hoping that I'll be a little over on it, yeah. And I'll move it then.
Yeah. I think here's another thing that I have to remind myself of often. There are thousands of some of these cards, there are thousands of them. There is one all-time high. One card is an all-time high.
Yep.
So like we always come in with the presumption that we are going to get the all-time high value out of our card. Well, the likelihood of that is really unlikely. And I think when we walk at a show like this, you can really see a savvy dealer or a savvy businessman when he's realizing, okay, the all-time high on a card is 215. If I can get 200 for it, that's a slam dunk.
Yep.
Because no one is going to pay the actual $215 of the one sale that spiked up to 215 out of a guy that was panic bidding on eBay. The real authentic value of that is probably $200.
Let's go to that real quick, because yesterday I did find a dealer that I enjoyed working with, and I have had this happen many, many times at card shows, and I want the audience to kind of know what I feel is a good move at a card show, and I'd like your take on it too. So I think there's 90% of the time you're going to walk up to a table and you're going to ask for a price, and the price that you get is going to be 20 to 30% over recent comps. And you're going to kind of ask yourself why. You should ask yourself why. You shouldn't necessarily ask the dealer why, but you should at least ask yourself why. And you should maybe ask that about a couple cards at each table, right? Then when you get, then you need to move around the show. Don't feel obligated to make an offer or do anything. I think it's a strategic move to ask those questions, get a feel, because that's getting a sample size of what's at that person's table. Once you get that sample size, you're pretty much going to follow a pattern around the rest of that person's table that's going to be a similar pattern. So go to a different table. Keep doing that at tables until you get answers that are under recent comps.
Yeah.
Not to be a price gouger or anything like that, but that's what you should be getting.
Mm-hmm.
Because the reality is that you're the customer. There's a lot of competition for your attention at a card show like this, and you can be in the driver's seat with the millions of cards that are out there. So when you find a dealer that is under comps on two or more cards, stay at that table. Do your research at that table, bundle together a deal with that dealer, because to your point, when you find a reasonable dealer, they're going to be reasonable about everything because they're a reasonable person. When you find an unreasonable dealer about a couple of cards, they're going to be hard to make a deal with.
Unless the couple of unreasonable cards that they have are like big cards that they have more money in than, like, they can't afford to come down to you. But yes, I agree.
100%. And I have empathy for those people because I'm in that situation a lot. And a lot of times I have to tell people, look, I understand if you want to pass on this, I'm going to have to hold because I'm underwater on it so much. And I think it's going to go back up to where I'll at least break even. So I'm going to hold. But I think that, like, yeah, and to your point too, it could be that there's a really low pop card and the person just, maybe they do. Like my Darius Garland Kaboom is a card that I've had out that I bought from Chase Krim, BGS 9.5. That's a card I've had out at many, many card shows. That's a card that people have made me many, many offers on, and I've never moved it because it's just there's no comps for it that we can all agree on. So there's going to be those situations where there aren't really comps. But I just want people to not feel obligated to try and negotiate. I definitely don't want people to feel obligated to buy over comps at a card show, just because move around the card show, talk to people, find a dealer that's fun to work with, that's going to come down to your level, and it's going to be a win-win situation. And that's where you can win flipping sports cards, buying at shows.
Yeah, I talked to a good dealer named Jimmy yesterday, and I was trying to move a couple of a basketball playoff marketable cards. I mean, two silvers and an out of 99 auto from starters on NBA teams in the playoffs still. And so that's a hard market. So I even went into the negotiation saying, are you guys buying basketball playoff players? Because they know the value's weird.
Yeah.
And I know the value's weird. Just by saying that, you're like, I'm setting the standard of this might be weird. And there might be some comps that are weird right now because of the nature of the card. But I went into this negotiation, and we ended up actually not doing the deal because I felt like I wasn't getting the value back that I really he wanted to trade me some cards that had the current value of the current value cards I had, but I could they were just going to be long-term holds for me.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'd rather have either one card for these three or cash. And he was like, I just can't do that. And I'm like, well, I really respected the way that we negotiated. And he goes, I really respected it as well. Here's my card. If I can make another deal with you at the show, I would enjoy that.
I love that. I love that. I think that's something that doesn't get talked about enough either that I want everybody to know about is like make those connections at these kinds of shows because people have more cards than they bring to the shows. People will have different cards. The next minute, people have different cards than they had the minute that you're talking to them.
Absolutely.
So if you make those relationships, that's how card show people make their money. That's how, like, because our audience knows we're not necessarily, we love card shows, but we're more online people. So what we talk about is more online strategy. And it's very different than a card show strategy.
Absolutely.
But card show people, there's, you know, my wife has asked me, like, hey, you've talked about all these people making money at card shows. Why don't you do the card show thing more? And I'm like, why don't I, right? Like, there's a lot of reasons. We won't get into all the reasons why. Travel,
being
time,
away from your family.
Being away from the family. I'm not a high school kid. The high school kids are the ones really doing that very well.
Yeah.
And guys that aren't in high school but that travel to shows and maybe own card shops or maybe just that's their business. But I love what they do, and I have a lot of respect for what they do. And building relationships with those people, I think you can do both. Like, you can be you and I.
Yeah.
You can have relationships with those people. You can get and you can move in and out of cards both ways. I like personally, I like what we do where we have the option of being a good eBay seller. We have the option of moving stuff at card shows. There's two more things I want to throw out before I forget.
Well, can we just take a moment to realize that that brother over there just pounding a Dos Equis at the show? He's walking around with a Dos Equis.
Texas.
That's what's going on.
Texas. Shout out Dallas Card Show. They've reposted some of my stories on Instagram, which I really appreciate. Great show. I've always wanted to come to this show, and I'm glad we're here. I'm glad I'm here with Kendall.
This has been a bucket list for me.
Bucket list for me, too, to be here with Kendall, with Chase, with Cody. Again, big thanks to the Texas Roadshow guys for letting us set up in their booth. Yeah. We like to squat in people's booths. So if you want us to
love that we are squatters
in your booth, we will do it if you're a good person. But a couple of things like that I was trying yesterday too. So like one thing is dealers want to buy.
Yeah.
Whether they have like a sign out that says they're buying or not. Like when I've set up as a dealer at a card show, the best thing is buying.
Yeah.
I like because you get people that are hungry to sell because why? Because they want cash to spend on other things.
And they have the understanding you're probably coming in under comps.
Yeah.
So you don't even have to
some people are dicks too. Some people are like, "Oh, I'm not interested in that." Just if you're setting up as a deal, like
a larger conversation about just respect people.
Let's shout out to Mosaic Joe real quick because Mosaic Joe like comes to my mind as like a just a good person that sets up at card shows that does not have a card shop. He also flips online. He does everything. And he will, like, he'll be nice, and he'll look for opportunities
that
at a table.
That dude moves cards like nobody's business.
He's so good at it.
Him and Krim are the king of just, like, being in a card for 5 minutes.
Yep. And Maddox Yost, too. I can't remember if you've met Maddox or not, but Maddox is he's a Brentwood, Tennessee kid that I know. He's graduating from Ravenwood High School this year. And he's been at multiple cards. He's a m.pokeyworld on Instagram.
Okay, I think I know who you're talking about.
And he's one of those young adults that moves through cards minute by minute and moves through, you know, let's just say five figures of cash at all times at card shows, basically.
Love that.
Four to five figures of cards of dollars at card shows. And so here's the other thing.
Wish
though,
I was like, there.
Well, I know. Again, back to my wife being like, why don't you do that? I'm like, well, because Maddox is like exhausted.
Yeah.
He's dead for the next week after a card show. I need to come back and be a parent and a business owner.
Graham was telling me yesterday about one of his buddies that he sells a lot to. And they do a lot of transactions to each other. And he's 16 years old, owns his own card shop in Alabama. And his mom homeschools him so that he can run his shop.
Badass. Shout out mom.
Yeah. Shout out mom for believing in the kid.
Yeah.
Shout out mom for having a non-traditional vision of what
Yeah.
High school looks like for a kid.
Love it.
Shout out to the kid for having the absolute cojones to do that as a 16-year-old. Like, most kids don't even think on that level. You know, they're like, we... I'm going to go on
most,
a, I'm gonna
most
go on a rant.
Most adolescents are trying to, like, tuck their boner up into
yes,
their waistline.
Exactly.
Constantly. And that's all they can think about.
Right. And it's like, I'm going to go on a rant here about the American school system. But we train kids to follow the masses. Like, we don't teach kids to be gritty entrepreneurs. So for that kid to be a gritty entrepreneur at 16 years old, first off, I consider that good parenting. Second off, incredible ownership by the kid of believing in his own vision, because that takes balls. It takes balls for us, and we're adults.
Yes.
You know, like,
it took me a while to pee or get off the pot.
Right.
With it. Yeah.
Anyway.
No, I totally agree. I'm glad you went on that rant, because I encourage Maddox and Johnny from New Jersey, who I did a deal with yesterday. He was at the National. He and his partner, his name escapes me of his business partner, but they're both in the 16, 17. I mean, Johnny, I think, is probably 18 or 19. But if you're out there and you're like 15 through 19 or close to that age, and you're wondering, should I stop cards because I need to go do the adult responsible thing? My answer is F no, because of what Kendall just said. Yeah. Like, the world is different than what the traditional school system trains for. And so any chance I get, like, I saw Johnny and we talked at the National. He was on a show and tell episode. And he told me after the episode, he's like, I don't know if I'm going to continue to do this in college. And I saw him yesterday and I was like, please tell me you're in college and you're still flipping cards. And he's like, yes and yes. So I was like, good for you. Keep going. There's no reason to stop. If you're doing it, so I love the 16-year-old that you talked about a minute ago, and I want everybody out there, like, if you're good at it, here's the thing, Kendall, like, as adults, I've wanted my entire life is to find something that I love to do that I'm good at and have that be my career.
Yeah.
That's all I want. And if you're 16 and you already have that, why would you change it?
You would change it because of the likelihood or reliability of the American dream.
But doesn't everybody change jobs every 3 years anyway?
Yeah, but they don't know that. You know, like, they're like, yeah, I'm going to go be an engineer or I'm going to go be a CPA at Charles Schwab and be amazing. You know, like,
yeah.
Oh, the likelihood of that is pretty low, you know? And, I mean, that's unless you got connections. So just keep hustling.
You know what's interesting about this whole conversation? You may be listening to this thinking, like, these guys are rambling, but actually there's a theme to this conversation. And the theme is having self-awareness and also having the ability to understand what's valuable to your audience.
Yeah.
And you said that at the beginning of this episode, and I think this is actually where I wanted to go anyways. Like, yesterday with the buying, with the people buying at tables, that are set up at tables, don't just walk up and show them everything that you have to potentially buy from you. Look at what they have.
Yes, I did that yesterday.
Right?
That's great. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, so look at what they have and be like, do I have anything
that they would want?
That they would want based on what they have out, and only show them those things.
Yep. So that's what I did yesterday, is I would go around and look at tables. This is what I'll walk you through my process of how I moved these three cards yesterday. I would walk up to tables that, one, had other basketball cards of either the same players or the same I was selling some Prism Silvers. So other people that had some Silvers out, you know, like, you can tell there's some people that are all Raws or they're all autos only, or, you know, whatever, only Panini dudes, or, you know, old school vintage. That one's obviously really easy to find, you know, like, it's really easy to be, you're not going to sell a Kaboom to a guy that only sells 50s Bowman cards.
They're not even going to know.
They're going to be like, what's
a Kaboom?
They're
not going to know who to move it to either. They don't have an audience to move it to.
Yeah. And if you go, you have to know, look at the case.
Yeah.
Just look at the case. And then also, this is another pro tip from Lefty McKee. You can look at the case and be like, would I trade into any of these cards?
Yes, because, that's what I was just going to say.
Because, like, if you have, if you're wanting 500 cash for three cards, or you could say, or I really like this Wimby Prism Ice PSA 10 that's around 530 in value. And you're like, I'll sell, or I'll move all these cards for 500 cash, or we could just trade for that.
Yep.
And because the guy didn't go for it because he knows that that 540 Wimby is going to be 600 in 3 months.
I tried to do the same thing yesterday, and I got close a couple of times, and they were good people. We just couldn't make a deal happen because I think the other side needed some amount of cash. And I just, what I wanted to do was I wanted to trade a couple of PSA 9 Kabooms for some running backs that I think that I know that I can sell in August for a profit. But if I can move them now in a trade for a more liquid card, like a Wemby Prism Silver PSA 10 or a CJ Stroud Prism Silver PSA 10, those were the two cards I was trying to trade, really, and I would have given some cash along with those cards. I think it's hard to package together. I haven't done that much trading, so correct me if I'm wrong. You have more experience with actual trades than I do. But I think it's harder to be on the side of like packaging together multiple cards for one card than it is like you have to have. I would think you would have to, if you're trying to like trade up, which I guess would be like packaging multiple things together to get a more valuable thing. I think it's harder to you have to have like two or three really, really good cards.
Yeah,
it can't just be like
you have to lose
one good
on at
card.
Least one of the cards.
Yeah. Okay,
so like I was. Just for transparency's sake, I was at a Jalen Williams Silver 10.
Jalen Williams?
Yes.
I think you combined Caleb and Jalen and said
Jalen.
Caleb?
Jalen Williams?
Jalen. That's what I heard.
Jalen Williams. J-Dub.
J-Dub.
The guy from Santa Clara. There's two Jalen Williams on the Thunder, so you got to be specific.
J-A-L-E-N.
Yes, sure. I don't know which one is spelled which way, so that gets more confusing to
That's me. The one you had.
Good. So the guy that is the starter...
Yeah,
that's an actual
the good
impact
one.
Player.
You know, he's Cody Williams' older brother. Cody Williams from Colorado, who's going to be in the draft.
Little, that's sick.
Yeah, that's pretty
cool.
I did
not know that. Anyway, so I had a Prism Silver of him, PSA 10. Prism Silver of Tyrese Haliburton, PSA 10. Two very marketable cards for two players that are in the NBA playoffs still but could potentially not make the next round. So this is exactly the Tyrese Maxey move I made last
that's
year.
That's why you went up and was like, I know this is weird right now.
And then I had a Josh Giddey out of 99 auto that was not a Prism silver or anything. It was just like a random Josh Giddey auto. And it was a PSA 10, so it was worth about $50. But I was fully willing for this card to just be thrown in if the guy would give me full value, basically, on the other two cards or close to it.
Yeah.
And then I was going to move it into a third card or into a fourth card.
Yeah.
So I was basically going to lose the Josh Giddey for the full amount of the other two cards to move into another card.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, I think that's smart. I think that's what you have to do. You're validating what I thought. You have more experience with those kinds of trades. But yesterday I made a move, too, where I was like, you know, they were offering $290 for a few cards, and we were close. And I was like, I really need to get this to $300. And they were like, well, you throw in that base PSA 9 card that's just sitting there, and we'll get to $300. Yes. So it was $10 for that card. And
they can move it for $15, probably.
It would have sold on eBay maybe for $10 or $11, which is actually like $6 on eBay after fees and all that stuff. So, yeah, I mean, meat on the bone, love it. Being relevant to your audience in terms of who you're trying to work with, you're going to get way further, and you're going to have a better experience. We want people that go to card shows walking away just feeling like they had fun and had a good experience. Yeah. And you're just going to have more of a better experience if you think through what Lefty said. Think through what the other side needs and is going for. And you can use some of your own intuition just by seeing what kind of cards they have out on the table. And I love the size of this Dallas show, by the way. Great size show. Perfect size. It's not too big. It's not too small. And
there's another room, actually.
Yeah, that's true. There's multiple other rooms, by the way. There's like a vintage room.
Yeah.
And then like...
a whole room for PSA.
There's a whole room for Beckett.
Yeah.
But
yes, I do agree. It's a good size.
It's a good size. And where I was going with that is, like, don't just get stuck at a table being like, oh,
this is my only option.
This is my only option. Like, no, there's other options. And why not also, like, if you find a card at a card show and the dealer wants more than comps, but you really want that card, why not go on eBay and, like, bid on the same card and maybe get it for less?
Yeah, if you can. Like, I that's what I feel like these shows are really good for, cards that are very low pop.
Yeah.
Or very high pop. Like, if you've got a mid-tier something that would probably sell better on eBay because somebody's Google searched it, you know, like I'm not going to move any of my 2014 Messies this weekend here because, well, one, the value on them is not good right now. But at the same time, like, that's just a card that is, like, people are just going to glance over at the show.
Yeah.
But if they're a Kaboom, never gets looked over, no matter who it is at a card show like this.
That's actually why I really like trying to snipe Kabooms on eBay and then bring them to card shows.
Yeah.
And because there's not that many comps on Kabooms either. So what you have, like, it's kind of fun actually being at a card show and watching somebody try to comp your Kaboom. And, like, just listening to him do it.
Yeah. Well, I'm on this one that's $800 from 2 years ago. It's like, okay, dude, like, did you not calculate even inflation in the last 2 years into this?
Yeah, I'll give you. And then here's the other. Okay, so we do actually have to have, like, a little bit of a discussion about, I don't like too much negativity. And I feel like this is not too negative anyway, but I feel like we've also brought a lot of valuable kind of fun insights in this segment. But let's talk about the fact that, like, everybody needs to be going on, like, trying to gouge each other at all costs.
Yeah, I hate that.
I mean, it does kind of feel like, and here's what let me explain. So, like, this is new to me. Like, I've been going to card shows since the National in 2022 that you and I met at. I've been going to a bunch of different card shows since then. And recently, just in the last, like, two shows, the Nashville show in March that I went to, and this show a little bit so far, it's only been like one night of the VIP stuff as of now, but there's this situation where it's like, okay, the most recent comp is 400, so I'm gonna offer you 260. And I'm thinking, okay, so And the math on that goes sort of like, well, 80% of comps would be 310 or 320. I don't know if the math is right.
Sure.
But then I need to pay you 70% or 65% of comps so that I can move it for 80% of comps in profit. And people are, like, telling you this. And you're like, so you value it at 280 or 290, but we're each looking at a $400 comp.
Yep.
From yesterday.
Yeah.
So what the F is going on, Lefty? Explain that.
Well, cash is king at this kind of thing. Because there are some people that if you have $250 into it, it's a $500 or it's a $400 card, but they'll give you $260 cash for it. Let's just create that scenario.
Okay.
You have $250 into a, I don't know,
a Najee Harris PSA 9 Kaboom.
Sure. Okay, you have $250 into it that you've purchased it for. The guy's like, he's straight up with you. Here's the numbers. Here's where I'm trying to get to. Here's where I need you to be at if you want cash for this card. So he's willingly saying, you can walk away and I'm okay with you walking away, but do you need the cash? Because if you do, I mean, it's a classic loan shark situation.
Yeah.
You know, like, if you need collateral at the moment, you know, it's like a pawn shop. You're not going to get $400 for that card at a pawn shop because they know you're coming needing money. You
know? Yes. And that, I guess that proves the point that I was saying earlier in the show. The best way to win is to set up a table at a card shop and buy cards there.
Yep.
Because you can be that person. You're the driver. Yeah. You can be that person.
Yeah.
And, like, they may not all work out, but you're paying way less than you would pay anywhere else to do that. And I guess I get it. My only concern for the hobby is, like, as new people come into the hobby and they go to a card show.
It's hard.
It's like, it's a little bit dejecting to be like, Well, I bought this card for, you know, a lot of people it's going to be more like, I bought this card for $70. It's selling for $90 on eBay. Why are you only offering me $55? That's $15 less than what I paid for it. And I, you know, and so I just, I want everybody to win. I mean, unfortunately, not everybody is going to win, but I just, I want everybody to win. So I want everybody to have kind of their own plan mapped out. And like, we were actually talking, like, let's give a quick shout out to Raphael Mosley. He's also known as Prism God.
Culture Collision.
Culture Collision founder.
What a guy.
Entrepreneur extraordinaire. Great guy. We had a great conversation with him for a while.
Extremely like, transparent dude.
Love him. Love him. And yeah, he was just basically breaking it down as to how the whole formula works and wants everybody to win. And I forget where I was going with how I was going to make that point about wanting everybody to win and all that stuff. But I guess I wanted to shout out Prism God in the process. I guess I lost my train of thought completely.
It's all good.
So there
we
go. The
train of thought ended at the Prism God station.
There
you can just rest there.
In the style of our friend Carter Bryant, there you go.
Nice.
Lefty, anything else you want to add before we wrap up this segment here from the Dallas Card Show?
Well, we're probably going to walk a little bit today. What are you looking for?
Oh, there we go. Maybe this will spark what I was going to say earlier. Who knows? I am going to... First, I'm going to try to sell a couple of cards. I'm going to try to sell a couple of cards that I'm already over on. Like, I'm going to make money on. And I'm going to get the cash so that I don't have to go to the ATM. And I don't have to go to my PayPal account or Venmo. And then I'm just going to walk and I'm going to look for cards that... I think what you said earlier, it's smart to look for either really, really low pop cards that you want or really, really high pop cards that you know you can move easily.
And you know a very solid comp on.
Yeah, like yesterday, like I'm going to do in a minute here on the show, I'm going to like show my actual pickups from the show. But one of them is a CJ Stroud just base Prism PSA 10, and I got it for like 110. And it's comping at, I don't know, like 130? Or something. So like to me that's a good pickup because I'm just not gonna lose. That's what I was gonna say. So I knew this would come back to me. What I was telling Raphael that he seemed to agree with to a certain extent is that like everybody is going to what I believe is that generally when you're new to this you're going to lose 50% of the time. Like it's gonna be an L. You're going to You're going to lose 20% of the time. Like big time L's 20% of the time. You're going to break even, which some people consider an L, 50% of the time. So let's just say like 70% of the time it's going to be like a bit of an L. Like you're not going to walk away and you know with cash flow. Well, you're going to walk away with cash flow, but you're not going to walk away with profit, which is a whole other discussion. But the 30% of the time, you're going to win to the point where it more than makes up for the fact that you lost the other 70% and your time that you put in. So if you do it the right way, I think that's what your expectation should be. And I think the reason why I went through the whole Raphael thing to get there is because even if you're like dejected at an offer of like $55 on a card that you paid $70 for, it's getting the cash flow back and it's realizing this is maybe one of my 50 to 70% of the time and then having a situation where you can win the other 30%. So, Lefty, let's go walk around, brother, and have a good rest of our day.
Sounds awesome.
And we'll see everybody soon. So we did go walk around and we did have a great rest of our day. And then we did have an amazing Saturday at the Dallas Card Show. So that was recorded on Friday with Lefty McKee. And you heard me mention my pickups. So the top five pickups from the Dallas Card Show, I already mentioned in that recording with Lefty that I got a CJ Stroud 2023 Prism base PSA 10 for 110. Right? 110 cash. I also got an Anthony Richardson 2023 Prism base SGC 10 for $30 cash. I got a Dak Prescott 2016 Prism silver BGS 9.5 for $90 cash. I also got a Dak Prescott 2016 Optic Base PSA 10 for $30 cash. And I got a Tua Tagovailoa 2020 Prism Base PSA 10 for $40 cash. Now, these were my top five pickups. Did I run them all through the formula? I absolutely did. They were all, in fact, in the formula. And I was walking around the Dallas Card Show with my phone out, and I was looking at the nooffseason.com formula-based rankings. I was also looking at my own personal dashboard when I was selling cards because I wanted to know, okay, how much am I into each card for that I was carrying around in my case? So those were two very, very good tools to have out at my card show. And however, what's interesting is out of the top five pickups that I made on Friday that I prepared for this show, I am only still holding one of the cards. And this is the theme that I kind of want to hit on for the rest of today's episode is you heard me say in that segment with Lefty that the best thing to do at a card show is to set up a table. And I also gave a lot of really good tips, I feel, and so did Lefty, on what you could do if you're just walking around a card show. Like if you don't have to have a table to have some big time card show wins. And I think we gave some good tips in that last segment about how to do that, how to navigate that. But the best thing is to set up a table, or at least what Lefty and I did on half of Friday afternoon and then all day Saturday was we actually, Chase and Cody allowed us, thank you to those guys, allowed us to have one of their showcases to use. And we just sat next to them, next to Chase, and we were essentially part of the Texas Roadshow shop setup in our own little sports card strategy show booth where we were squatting. And so right next to where you just heard us and saw us do that segment from, we set up a showcase. Lefty and I split it. We had like 50% of them were his cards and 50% of them were my cards. And all day Saturday, I made more profit than I've ever made at a card show just simply by putting things in the showcase, accepting cash offers. So I sold the CJ Stroud that I paid $110 for. I sold it for $115. Okay. Now I know that that doesn't necessarily knock anyone out of their chairs, but stay with me on this. I sold the Dak Prescott Prism Silver BGS 9.5 that I bought for $90 for $95. Okay. So I've made $10 profit so far on two cards. I sold the Dak Prescott 2016 Optic Base PSA 10 that I sold $30. That I bought for $30. I sold it for $40. Okay. I sold the Tua 2020 Prism Base PSA 10 that I bought for $40. I sold it for $50. Okay. Are you following this theme? I traded for an Anthony Richardson Prism Laser PSA 10 and I sold it. The trade value essentially was $140. I sold it for $160. Okay. I also did a bunch of things on Saturday. Like I bought a card and then I immediately put it in my showcase. So the best two examples of that were I bought an Arch Manning rated prospects Panini sealed card for $100. Okay. And that comps at about $180 to $200. I bought it for $100 because I bought multiple cards from a person and I bought them all under comps, but it wasn't in the best condition. It was Panini sealed, however. And I made an offer at $100. They accepted it. They wanted the cash. So I guess I was a little bit of the pawn shop that Lefty and I talked about on that one, right? Where I was saying you can be the pawn shop, right? And so you could do that respectfully. You can help everyone out. They can help you out. I sold that card about 15 minutes later for $180. Okay. So that's a little bit better than the $5 profit on the Stroud and the $5 profit on the DAC and the $10 profit on the other DAC and the $10 profit on the Tua. When you buy a card for $100, put it in your showcase, immediately sell it for $180. And then I did an Amen Thompson Prism out of 25 autograph, rookie autograph PSA 10, comped at $480, bought it for $400. Sold it immediately right after that for $450. So when those things add up and I walked home and came home with more cash in my pocket than I've ever brought back from a card show. And it was a mix of all of those things. It was a mix of buying at people's tables for a good price and then putting it out in my showcase. It was also a mix of buying at my own table with Lefty and then putting it out into my showcase. It was also a mix of what I haven't talked about yet that I want to tell everybody is I did move out of a significant amount of my Shedeur Sanders cards because, as many of you know, I've been Shedeur Sanders' number one supporter from a sports card investment standpoint for a long time now. And I was able to move. I was holding about 33% of my entire sports card portfolio was in Shedeur Sanders, which I knew was a position of risk, like way too risky to be that invested into a player that is a college football quarterback and really anything can happen, good or bad. So I moved out of about 100% of my lowest Shedeur Sanders cards, which were still pretty nice cards. And I have still several Shedeur low serial numbered Bowman Chrome First graded autos, high graded autos in my portfolio. But I was able to move out of pretty much all of the Shedeur cards that I brought to the show, which was maybe about 20 Shedeur cards at a probably 15% profit. Same thing with my Travis Hunter cards, 15% profit. So while the 15% profit part doesn't seem very attractive upon first glance, it is a diversification. It is all in cash. So you're not paying any of the eBay fees. You're leaving meat on the bone for other people. And to me, this is how the hobby works well. And I was able to make a deal with a great person named Bryce. Shout out Bryce. Hopefully you're listening to the show. I do think Bryce will do well on the Shedeur and the Travis that he brought from me and bought from me. And yes, Bronny James. I sold him three Bronny James cards, moved out of those for, I would say, maybe a 5 to 7% profit. So Bronny did go down and then he has gone back up again. And so I have taken that opportunity to just go ahead and liquidate my Bronny James situation because I was definitely very highly invested in Bronny. He may get drafted. I think he will get drafted, and I think he will play in the summer league. And I think that if you are holding Bronny cards, hopefully you bought in at a price very recently when I told you to buy in, and you will make money on Bronny because there are those selling markers coming up. But let me know. I, however, had bought in a little bit earlier. I was a little bit more bullish on Bronny before the end of his USC season, right? So I was down a little bit on Bronny, and I took the opportunity as he has gone back up due to the hype of the NBA draft combine and him being in the news. I took the opportunity to move out of Bronny for a profit, and I might have left money on the table there. Hopefully I did, because hopefully Bryce and all of you are going to be able to profit from Bronny. So flipping at the table was a big win. Those were my top five pickups. I think I still would have done well if I would have held them. The way that I buy cards at card shows is I want to buy cards that I can either hold, fill the selling marker, or that are liquid enough to go ahead and just flip at the show. So I'm getting better at it. I'm not as good at it as some of the guys that I shouted out in the episode, like Mosaic Joe, Maddox Yost, M.PokeWorld, but I'm learning and getting better, and Lefty and I are going to continue to try to do this kind of thing together at shows. So excited. I also, in the process, picked up a couple of Victor Wembanyama raw Prism base cards for just under comps at my table. A Bilal Coulibaly red, I believe it's a red out of, like, is red out of 149? I think red's out of 149. I think that's what it is. I got a Justin Herbert rookie select serial numbered out of, I think, 399. It's a die cut. And so I still have that AR SGC 10 that I'm going to crack and submit to PSA. And speaking of cracking and submitting to PSA, up next is Will They Gem? And this is a special one. I want to shout out Mr. Minty, but first I want to show you the video of me opening this card. It's a Michael Jordan 1987 Fleer base. And this is a card that I always have my eye on. If you're familiar with the Sports Card Strategy show, there are a few cards that I always have my eye on that are from the 80s. And it's usually a Joe Montana, a Michael Jordan, sometimes a Jerry Rice or a Barry Sanders. These guys sell very, very well at all times. And, you know, there are like maybe little mini spikes in value throughout the year, like some buy low, sell high opportunities with these guys. But generally the play in my mind is to try to move up a grade from a BGS half, either a half grade, like a 0.5 grade up to the PSA grade. But in this case, the Michael Jordan 1987 Fleer, I got this in a BGS 9, and it has 3.95 subgrades, centering, edges, and corners. It has an 8 surface grade, which I could not see much of an issue on the surface. I did see like a couple of specs, and I wondered, can I get those off somehow? I know there's been a lot of controversy about card cleaning recently in the hobby, but I still thought, you know what? You know, Kurt's Card Care is pretty reputable. Mr. Minty's pretty reputable. Even though there's been some bashing of the cleaning and stuff like that, they're still like nice guys and reputable guys, and they have good products and I think good best practices to avoid the controversy and stuff. And so I thought, look, there's a strategy here with this Jordan, because I actually got it for just under $900, and it sells in PSA 9 for between $1,100 and $1,300, and it also sells in PSA 10, which is a huge long shot. There's almost no chance at a PSA 10, but it does sell for $17,000. So if it crosses over from a BGS 9 to a PSA 9, which it could, then I'd be up a few hundred dollars. If I crack it and submit it to PSA and I get a PSA 9, I'd be up a few hundred dollars. And if I crack it and submit it to PSA and get a PSA 8.5 or PSA 8, I'd be out a couple hundred dollars. So in my mind, even though it would suck to be out a couple hundred dollars, it definitely would still be worth the risk. So what I needed to go talk to somebody who knows what they're talking about. And that person for me was Mr. Minty. And so I want to give a shout out to Mr. Minty, because he was at the Dallas Card Show and super nice guy, super knowledgeable. I sat there with him and talked to a lot of the people that were using his services, and I learned a lot. And here are some of the questions I asked him. I said, and it was in the BGS 9 slab when I showed it to him. I said, would you send this in as a crossover grade? Meaning PSA would see the BGS 9 in the BGS 9 slab. He said, no. He said, I would not do that. And that kind of validated a lot of what we normally talk about on the Sports Card Strategy Show, which is PSA grader looking at a BGS slab and being like, I'm not going to give it the grade that it deserves. I'm going to, because it's a BGS slab, I'm going to give it a lower grade. It seems like other people have had that experience. And so I was worried about that, but I said, what if I say minimum PSA 9 on it? Cause you can do that. And he was like, you could do that, but you know, you're probably just going to get it back in your BGS 9 slab if that's the case. And then you're out like $75 or at least $45 for the crossover submission. Now, so then he's like, he and I, long story short, were kind of thinking like, we're going to crack this thing, right? And I, you guys know, I crack my own slabs all the time, but I'm sitting there. He's been so helpful. He charges $20 to crack slabs. And he's like, do you want me to crack it for you? And so I'm thinking, you know, I want to help this guy out. He's so nice. He's so knowledgeable. He's basically giving away his time for free. And I said, yeah, let's do it. I'll pay you the $20 to crack it, even though I crack my own. He's like, do you want me to, you know, wipe it down for you? You know? And I'm like, sure. You know, because that was the other thing I was thinking is like, if we can make the surface look better, that's better. Right. And I'm willing to take the risk. I'm willing to try it. I know there's a bunch of people out there that like to read the headlines. They like to jump in the drama. They like to get into like, hey, you know, card cleaning, blah, blah, blah. And like, I'm not like that. I would just try it. Let me try it, you know? And so he cracked it. He wiped it off. It looks way better than it did before. And he was super honest. He's like, look, there's no guarantee. He's like, he explained, I want to share this with you guys. He explained about the surface grade. He was like, it might be an 8 surface grade because not of printing, but apparently with these older cards in the packs, they used to stick together. And of course, you know, if you opened them several years after they were manufactured, there's probably even more likelihood that they might stick together, right? And so he was talking about how that can affect the surface of the card. So he really looked it over. He took a long time looking it over. He said, look, I think you've got a good chance at a 9 if we crack it. He's like, I think there's like almost no chance of a 10, but you know, you never know unless you try. And so that's what I did. I said, look, Mr. Minty, let's go ahead and do this. Let's make this happen. And we went ahead and moved forward with a submission where he cracked it for me. He then, like I said, wiped it off. You could tell I'm avoiding using the phrase cleaned it off, but he wiped it off and, submitted to PSA. He's going to walk it into PSA. He's going to drop it off. He's not going to do like an actual walkthrough because those are way expensive, but he's going to drop it off because he's in California. And, he told me he's going to drop it off for me this week. And I elected to do the 20-day turnaround time, I believe is what I elected. So it's going to cost me $45 for the submission. And let's cross our fingers for an upcharge, because an upcharge would mean that we profited. And in that case, I would pay Mr. Minty a little bit more for covering the fees. And he's the man. So here we go. I've never used Kurt's Card Care, but I do like Kurt as a human being. He's super nice. And I had never used Mr. Minty, but I felt like it was a great opportunity to use Mr. Minty and try it. And so if you go to MrMinty.com, just MRMINTY.com, and click on the services page, it's just /pages/services at MrMinty.com. You can see right here all of his information. If you're watching on youtube.com/PaulHickey, I'm showing it to you. If you're not, if you're listening on the podcast apps, guys, just go to MrMinty.com, check him out. And let's cross our fingers that I will get at least a PSA 9, but it's submitted raw. And I was debating it for a long time. And, you know, knowledge is power. So thanks to Mr. Minty for the knowledge. Thanks to Mr. Minty for the service. And again, shout out to Chase and Cody Krim, Texas Roadshow Cards, Lefty Cards, Dallas Card Show, Prism God, Jay, Mojo Sports, and everyone else that I met at the Dallas Card Show. It was good to see Jeff Wilson, my guy Jeff Wilson of Sports Card Investor. Got to hang out with him, talk with him for a while. That's always a pleasure. And one last thing before I let you guys go on this beautiful Monday. Are you ready to start grading your cards? CGC Cards is the perfect place to slab your favorite sports cards. From their crystal clear holders to their affordable pricing, CGC Cards is the perfect stop for your grading needs. Go to cgccards.com to start grading today. And I know I've talked about just about every other grading company under the sun on today's episode other than CGC Cards, but they are the best place, I believe, for perfect PC protection. Check them out. A little bit of more live chat love. We had Mr. T hop in, MW hopped in, Alan Ma, Rusty Immigart. Thanks everybody for hopping in here. M.PokeyWorld, that's my guy Maddox, George Scherer, Koa, Jay Gregory. Good to see all of you. Don't forget to check out nooffseason.com, guys. It's the best place to learn how to make money flipping sports cards. I'll see you guys again soon. Have a great day. I'm Paul Hickey. For Lefty McKee and everybody else at the nooffseason.com sports card network, have a great day. Thanks so much for being here with us on the Sports Card Strategy Show. To connect with us further, please subscribe to the YouTube channel at youtube.com/PaulHickey. Please also give us a follow on Instagram at Sports Card Strategy and on X at No Off Season Card. We also have a Discord that you could join at sportscardstrategy.com. Everyone, I'm Paul Hickey. For the rest of us here at nooffseason.com, have a great day. We'll see you again soon.